Hello, everyone, and welcome to Talk with a Doc, the show where we bring common questions to medical experts for insight and information. I'm Jennifer Semenza, and joining me is Dr. Gautam Shome, an expert in the field of allergies and immunology at Covenant Medical Group, a full clinical professor at Texas Tech University and Health Sciences Center, both in Lubbock, Texas, and a diplomate of the American Board of Allergy and Immunology. We're in peak season of allergies, and so we're here to discuss how allergies might be affecting you, effective treatments and strategies to get you through this allergy season, and to enjoy both the indoors and the outdoors. So let's get started. Hi, Dr. Shome. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your work with Covenant and what brought you into this field?
My name is Dr. Gautam Shome. I'm allergy, asthma, and immunology specialist. I'm also a clinical professor at Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center, where I teach residents and students. My basic background is in immunology, and allergy and immunology, as the name itself tells you, very closely connected to the immunology part of it. So that's one major incentive for me to follow that pathway. I was trained at the University of Michigan in allergy and immunology, but before I went to the fellowship, I had training in internal medicine at Michigan State University. Currently, I am the attending allergist and immunologist for Covenant Medical Group, and in addition to my responsibility as a faculty in the Health Sciences Center, where I'm a clinical professor.
So this is a surprisingly big topic, and I really want to break our conversation into a few main pieces. So first, we're going to go through understanding seasonal allergies, and then prevention, and then finally treatment. So let's get started by having a better understanding of this issue. Dr. Shome, can you tell us what are seasonal allergies and why do they occur? What's triggering them, and are there certain allergens that are just more responsible for this?
That's very good question and very relevant question. So let's talk about the seasonal allergen. As the name suggests, we're talking about the season and the allergy. In different geographic part of the United States, seasons are a little bit different. Just for an example, I'll take the northeast part of the country, where seasons are much more defined. So starting from end of March till the beginning of May is the tree season. I'm talking about tree pollen season. Then beginning of June to end of July, you're talking about the grass season. From July till the end of September, you're talking about the weed season. And with the first frost in October, all the pollen counts are gone. So when you talk about the seasonal allergy, typically we talk about outdoor allergy, pollen allergy in particular, and it is defined only in certain part of the country. So there is a significant overlap in many other part of the country. Example would be the West Texas, if you take it, Even though we have tree, grass, and wheat pollen season, but you might see seasonal allergy pattern even in the middle of December when the temperature fluctuation is so high. Sometimes we end up getting the seasonal allergy, unfortunately, in the non-season, you may call it, in the middle of the winter. So this is how we talk about the seasonal allergy, mostly outdoor pollen allergy. Then, of course, there is what we call non-seasonal or perennial allergens. We talk about mostly indoor allergens, but there can be some outdoor allergens which are also perennial. But indoor allergens, we talk about animal in particular, pets, dog and cat, roaches in the inner cities, big cities, dust mite in particular, where the humidity moisture is high. So those are the perennial, mostly indoor type of allergens. But in reality, what we see is that indoor as well as outdoor allergens are usually together. Not one person is only allergic to outdoor stuff or vice versa. So in other words, we see patients in both group at the same time. So your next question, why people get allergy, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So this is a million-dollar question. Unfortunately, allergy has many different reasons behind it. If you ask me, put one particular reason or few particular reasons in the matter. Most dominant factor in allergic diseases is the genetic factor. Is it everything? No. Published studies suggest that 30 to 40% of patients with allergic diseases, genetic factors play a big role. But having the right allergy gene doesn't make you allergic, clinically speaking. So you have to have environmental interaction. So you have to live in certain area of the country or certain part of the geography where you are exposed to different types of trigger, what we call allergens in this case. So you need the gene, then you need the trigger. Two together produces the disease, what we see. So it is not only just, you may have allergy gene, but if you're not exposed to the allergens, you are not going to have allergic conditions. So you have to live in a place where there are allergens, so the gene and environment interact together, produces the disease.
That makes sense. So what's happening in our body when we're suffering from our allergens and when we're triggered with them?
So that's a good question. So overwhelming majority of the patients will have defined characteristics of allergic disease process. So far I have talked about the environmental allergy, pollen, indoor and outdoors allergen, et cetera. But most of the allergic diseases usually start when they're very young. In the children, for example, it may not be the environmental allergy. It may be the food allergy that starts in the beginning. So if you're genetically predisposed, you end up reacting to a particular food. So that starts at very early age. 70% of the food allergy issue starts by the time children are 1 year of age. 90% by the time they're 5 years of age. Only 10% of the food allergies start when they're adult. So it starts with food allergy, then it can progress to other allergy, like nasal and sinus allergy, what we call hay fever type of symptoms, then asthma, and of course, skin disease, you know. So what do we call, there's a beautiful term in our field, what we call atopic march. So people or individuals who are destined to develop allergic diseases, they usually start with allergic skin disease like eczema, food allergy, progresses to the hay fever, then asthma. That sequence can change. Some people may start with eczema, some may start with nose and sinus symptoms, somebody can start with asthma. But one can progress to the next step, what we call atopic march. So pattern of disease is different. So if your issue is the food allergy, then it can affect your many different systems. But dominant system that is affected by food allergy reactions is the skin in the form of itching, rash. Sometimes you may have swelling of the skin tissue, what we call angioedema. It's a fancy medical term of severe swelling. If it affects the lip, you have lip swelling, tongue swelling, throat swelling. That can be a deadly manifestation of severe food allergy. Then it can affect your airways when you have got asthma-like symptoms like cough, wheezing, chest tightness, shortness of breath. So simple food allergy can have only skin disease. As the food allergy become more severe and life-threatening, those other serious symptoms can happen, as I mentioned. So this is how food allergy presents. If you talk about hay fever type of symptoms, you're talking about mostly itching, sneezing, runny nose, and congestion, and complication from those nasal and sinus symptoms. As the disease progresses, many of them will develop asthma type of symptoms, which can be cough, chest tightness, wheezing, shortness of breath. In the pediatric population, asthma symptoms may not be so obvious that I described. It may be the child may complain of chest tightness or chest pain for them. So the presentation is variable, depends on which organ system is involved and what stage of their disease is in the atopic march.
It's definitely a lot more than just itchy, watery eyes and runny nose. Thanks for that background and information. Is there a genetic component to allergies? Are you more likely to experience them if your parents have seasonal allergies?
Yes. So I always try to tell you, this is a very good question. So even without any major analysis, most of the studies you'll find that 30% of the genetic component. But I have simple saying here. If one parent is allergic to anything, like you have allergic conditions like hay fever or asthma or other allergic condition, you have got about 30% chance of having allergy condition, just one parent. If your two parents are allergy, in other words, they have both of them some allergic diseases, then you are increasing your risk to 70%. So your genetic load of allergic diseases is very high by then. Then you live in the environment where you have genetic interaction with the environmental factors, then you are more likely to get into trouble. Yes, strong genetic component, even single parent, 30%, two parent, 60 to 70%, then of course. And I know that I'm throwing a lot of numbers, but these are well studied and well documented.
Wow, gosh. What are the common symptoms of seasonal allergies and how do we differentiate between a common cold and seasonal allergies?
Very common question, very relevant question too. So seasonal allergies, the name itself tells you a lot. It happens during the season. particularly where these seasons are defined. So you're talking about the spring allergy season, starting from the end of February or March till the beginning of May. You're talking about tree allergen or tree pollen causing allergy symptoms. Then, of course, May, June, July, grass allergy, grass pollen. August, September, October, you're talking about more weed season, weed pollen. So if you are in the season, you're having symptoms, you have to suspect something like that. So what are the symptoms of allergic diseases? When they affect the nose and sinuses, you have itching, sneezing, runny nose, congestion. Post-nasal drip, like you cannot stop clearing your throat. It can affect your eye. So sometimes this is also interesting part. Many people believe that allergies only affect the nose and sinuses, but 50% of the patients with allergy in the nose and sinuses will have eye symptoms, like itching and watering of the eye. Eye swollen and shut, they will come and tell us. So those kind of symptoms you will see were in seasonal allergy symptoms. And other interesting factor is that not only their season happens or get worse during the season, but it is repeated every time of the, you know, year. Every time the spring comes in, that individual, you know, some of them dread even facing their fall or spring allergy season. They're more or less continual, last for months, not days or weeks. The different, how do you differentiate between the common cold symptoms versus the allergy symptoms? As I mentioned, season is one factor, recurrence of the symptoms is one factor, duration of the symptoms. If you have a common cold, you have an acute onset of symptoms lasting only for a few weeks, not months or many years. Symptoms can be still runny nose and congestion, sneezing, itching. You may also run the fever symptoms. Regular garden variety hay fever or allergy symptoms usually do not have any fever, chill, muscle pain, or joint pain, because you're talking about some infection. Infection, by definition, has some other component. You're stimulating the immune system in different way, which produces fever. Regular garden variety allergy symptoms, by and large, will not cause fever unless there's complication. And symptoms usually last less than 3 weeks, common cold symptoms. So if something is lasting more than, you know, 3 weeks, or you're taking antibiotic but symptoms are not getting better, think carefully. Ask yourself, is it happening every year? Is it lasting more than few weeks, few months, or more than that? Is there a family history of allergy and asthma? Is outdoor factors like cutting grass, mowing lawn, dust, wind, raking leaves, etc., make your symptoms worse? Think about it. You know, seek attention.
Good questions to ask. Very good question to ask yourself.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how can your reactions, or can your reactions to allergens change over time?
Absolutely. So let me put this in a different context. You know, allergic disease processes is like an orchestra. When you go to orchestra, you see first only one instrument start playing. As the music progresses, many different instruments come into play. Similarly, in allergic diseases, in the beginning or in the early stage of the disease process, only few chemical mediators play a role. So your symptoms may be mild or limited in nature. But as the disease progresses, symptoms become moderate to severe, and you may develop new symptoms. So one of the common things that we talk about, histamine and antihistamine. Histamine is a simple but very early player in the allergic disease processes, when you have good itching and sneezing type of picture. But once your inflammation sets in, many other chemical factors play a role. So you have got more swelling, you know, more severe response. Antihistamines are not going to do the trick to address your symptoms because your disease has progressed. Yes, allergic diseases progress. So this is the symptom progression I talked about. But how about the organ progression? Let's say in the beginning, when you have got allergy symptoms, you're dealing with mostly nasal and sinus symptoms, like itchy, sneezy, runny, and stuffy nose. But as these rhinitis and sinusitis symptoms persist for a long time, over the course of many years, 20 to 40% of them will end up developing asthma symptoms. You can consider it as a part of atopic march that I mentioned earlier. So you started in the nose and sinuses. Now you have to deal with the cough, wheezing, and shortness of breath. In other words, asthma symptoms, which can be life-threatening if you don't address it.
How does the impact of allergies differ between children and adults?
Remember, as I mentioned to you, most of the allergic diseases usually develop when they're very young. And when they're very young, the airways are still developing. So simple problem in the adult, you know, may be perceived as severe issue in the children because their airways are still small, developing. Room for accommodation is low there. So they can travel very seriously, number one. So this is the environmental allergy affecting the respiratory system. How about food allergy in the children? Most of them happen in the children, am I correct? So if that is the case, you know, they can go into anaphylaxis and they cannot tell what is happening to them. Them, you know, it is the caregiver's responsibility, parents' responsibility. You know, when all of a sudden you never had a reaction to any food and you put the peanut in their mouth and they have severe, you know, choking feeling, turning blue, stop breathing. So those things can be very unique and potentially serious if you don't address it and educate them. So I'm coming back to the food allergy because these are more deadly issues. If you don't address it, it can be life-threatening.
Absolutely. Yeah, the food allergies is certainly a little scarier than it sounds like than the environmental allergies. Yeah. Are there some areas that are better climates to live in when it comes to seasonal allergies, or is it just based on each person? And I ask that, I know a person who was told by a doctor to move from Florida to the Pacific Northwest to help with their allergies. And that seemed really unusual to me because of how green the west side of the Pacific Northwest is. And it just seems strange that, you know, I know so many people in this area who suffer from seasonal allergies. Are seasonal allergies regional-based sometimes?
So every region has different types of allergen picture, but nowhere in the United States you'll be able to get rid of all the environmental allergens. So that is not the advice I would give. So what people feel, this is an interesting question, though. We face it on a regular basis, too. Let's say you live in a certain part of the country and you are sensitized to the local allergens. If you move to a new place, their allergen picture is different. So for the first few years, you may be fine because you have left your old allergens coming to a new allergens environment. It takes at least 2 to 3 consecutive years of exposure to get sensitized to the local allergens. Let's say I live in West Texas, then I move to specific Northwest. What will happen? I will not have any issues with the pollen that we have in West Texas over there because I'm in a new environment. So I will be fine for first few years. But as I live there for 2, 3, 4 years, by the end of 3rd, 4th year, I have been exposed already 3 or 4 times. So I will get sensitized. Problem is not that you get better with the allergens. No, our genes are same. It doesn't matter where you move, you are still going to carry your God-gifted inherited genes to make it mildly. So you may be okay for the first few years. But you will be exposed to local allergen, then you will end up with the same picture that you had while you, in Texas, for example. So in other words, moving place to place is not going to make a huge difference in the long run, only short-term approach.
That makes sense.
Unless you send somebody on the top of Mount Everest, there is no, trees, grass, roots, and nothing.
We're someplace where nothing grows. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you recommend that people get tested to see what allergens affect them?
And I do not recommend allergy testing unless they have symptoms. So if you have got issues with allergies, like as I mentioned, seasonal, perennial, lasting issues, you have a trigger that it is coming every spring, every fall, then you suspect something is there, it's a nagging problem. It doesn't go away. You go to the primary care doctor, they give you antibiotic many times. You don't get any better. So how long is the long? If you have got months of symptoms, that's more than enough. You need to know what is happening, why. You need evaluation. So they can go to their primary care doctor, but ultimately, if your symptoms are chronic in nature, lasting more than 5 months in a year, you have other factors that I mentioned, seasonal factors and triggers. You need to find out what you are sensitive to or allergic to, since that is one of the major triggers for nose and sinus issue. Find out how severe the problem is, how extensive the problem is. Then comes the treatment part of it. If it's a mild disease, it doesn't affect your quality of life. You don't lose any sleep, don't miss any work or school. You can, maintain them under well control with occasional medication with your primary care doctor's advice. I don't think you need to do any special testing. The dangers of unnecessary testing is there are significant false positive reactions. So if you're doing fine, let's say food allergy is the most common culprit here. We see it all the time. I have no trouble with any food, doctor, but one of my kids is allergic to a few things, but I have no problem whatsoever. Can you test me for 50 different food? That is a big challenge, significant drainage of our money, economy in general. So because 50% of the test will be positive. If I test them for 100 foods, for example, half of them will be positive. But this kid is eating everything without any problem. He never had any problem. But parents are concerned they come for testing. And if I do the testing, what I do with the positive test? So you are digging a hole for yourself. You don't know what to do with those tests. And this is a big challenge to train. But if you have a strong history of reaction to food, we are all for testing food. But without any good history, it is not advisable to test for food allergy for sure. Even environmental allergy, one has to be very cognizant of the fact, what are you going to offer by testing? Doing blood tests for unnecessary reason, that is not what I personally prescribe, except in selective cases, you know. And panel testing is one of the hardest thing, you know. They will order a bunch of panel. You come with a food allergy, one food. And let's say you're allergic to apple. And the panel says that you have 10 different foods in the panel. You end up testing all of them. But this kid never had a problem with any food except apple. Now I find half of them is positive. What I tell them? So you put yourself into a big, you know, ethical dilemma. What do you do with that? They're concerned. Of course, they'll be concerned. It's our job to do the testing judiciously and recommend it according to the guidance. No panel testing, no testing without any history of clinical reactions for the food. For the environmental allergy, you go with the symptoms first.
Yeah, that's really helpful background. So before we jump into treatment, let's talk about prevention. So what are our options when it comes to avoiding seasonal allergies? What are usually like the first suggestions you give to someone experiencing those types of seasonal allergies? And are there lifestyle changes they can make to limit exposure?
Okay, so let me answer it in a few different steps here. Prevention after establishment of the disease means you have history of reactions in the past, like you are having itchy, sneezy, runny, stuffy nose, sinus congestion, feel miserable during the spring season. And now you come to the doctor, what can I do to prevent it happening next time? Correct? Is that the question? So
yes.
if that is the question, let me just explain to you. So you have got two important parts here. One, your genetic factors are there already. We know that because you have developed the disease. Second thing, you live in an environment where there are factors that can affect and interact with your gene, and then you have the disease. So once you have all this, you're fully in disease state now. So how can you avoid trees, grass, and wheat pollen? Simple word, it is impractical and almost impossible to avoid trees, grass, and wheat. Okay, you can cannot force anybody in this country or in fact any country. Okay, lock the doors and windows, stay in the basement, never get out. It's not practical.
No, it's not.
But you can minimize your exposure to reduce the symptoms. You may not be successful 100%, but you can minimize to a degree. But having said that, I must tell you, it's impractical. So how can you minimize? When the dirt is blowing, somebody's cutting grass or mowing the lawn, don't go outside and then take a deep breath and enjoy the free weather. Smell of fresh cut grass, you know? This is the thing people do here in every part of the United States. That can aggravate. So don't expose them to the environment where there is significant chance that you will get into trouble. Nose and sinus issues are still a problem, but asthma attack can be severe from those exposure. So avoid the outdoor environment when the pollen count is very high, usually early morning and late afternoon, and somebody's doing something in the lawn or in the yard. Number one, keep the doors and windows closed when the dirt is blowing, wind is blowing very high. Keep the room air conditioned as far as possible. That reduces the pollen count, indoor pollen count to a degree. But those are very minor, many times insignificant in limiting the amount of pollen exposure that you will be. So this is one thing you can do. There's nothing wrong with that. You can do it. But if you ask me, Dr. Shum, is there any study that suggests that you will be feeling better? You will not needing any medication? No. So next step in the prevention is that, you know, the season is coming. You might start taking antihistamine, nasal steroids. These are all over-the-counter medications. So you can prevent the symptoms happening. So you know that, you know, 16th of August, or you know, that's when the wheat pollen comes in. Start antihistamine nasal spray before the real season comes in. Pollen count get picked up.
Very smart. So
you can do the avoidance. You can do a little bit of medication. They don't need prescription now. Those antihistamines are over the counter. Nasal steroids are over the counter. You can use it. So this is how you can do a few of the preventive things. You know, people will always ask other options, but those are not practical.
So speaking of practical things that we can do, you know, we're starting to get to that season where people are going to be having their air conditioning running oftentimes in their homes. Is that something that really does help reduce the pollen and those allergens in your home?
Yeah, but as I told you, they do reduce, but there are no good studies that document those things. I mean, we have all advised it, if you can run the air conditioner, do it, you know, it does reduce the pollen count to a degree. But it is not something that I will rely on when I have got significant symptoms.
Is that because of the HEPA filters within those, or no. What is that? That's okay.
So yeah, HEPA filter is, you know, this is one other thing that, you know, HEPA filter has got different role. Reducing the allergen is one of them, but have a HEPA filter doesn't harm you. So if you have got a few extra money to spend, please do it. But don't ask me to give you an article that tells you that using HEPA filter reduces pollen and reduces the symptoms. I don't have that article to share with you.
Understood.
So as a specialist, I cannot just throw something at you, $500, $600 machine. You know, they send this, you know, one time I found a HEPA filter in my home. Somebody sent it to me, some of the HEPA filter company. But I have not written one prescription for HEPA filter ever. And I've done it for a long time.
Yeah.
So yes, if you have money, it is not harmful. That much I can tell you. But is it helpful? I don't know.
Got it. So let's talk about allergy prevention medications or histamine blockers. Do those work well for prevention? And what are they doing to the body when you take them?
Okay. So as I mentioned to you, in the beginning stage of the allergic disease process, particularly hay fever type of symptoms, like itching, sneezing, runny nose, etc., histamine is a big player. And antihistamines are the first line of medication that we use. They block those chemical mediators called histamine. And if you don't have histamine, you don't have, or you will have significantly reduced itchy nose, and itching is the cause for sneezing. So you'll stop the sneezing, and you also stop runny nose from that. But histamine has got little or no effect on the stuffy nose. So if somebody says, my nose is blocked or stuffed up, and you keep on gobbling those antihistamine pill, don't expect magic out of them. That's why many times these antihistamines are combined with what you call pseudoephedrine, a decongestant, Allegra D, Claritin D. Those medicines are combined because antihistamines alone are not good enough to control your stuffiness. But I don't prescribe those D medication a lot, particularly in the elderly population or senior citizen or anybody above the age of 50. I'm very, very careful. Those decongestion has a lot of side effect. It can raise your heart, raise blood pressure, affect your eye pressure. So why to invite more trouble if you can do without it?
What about like nasal steroid sprays? Do those work the same as antihistamines or can you use both?
Okay, yes. That's a good question. So as I mentioned to you, the antihistamine doesn't affect the stuffy nose part of it, nasal congestion. So nasal steroid is the first line drug for full-blown allergic rhinitis. It not only addresses itching, sneezing, and runny nose, but also addresses the stuffy nose or congestion. So if you have one medication that you want to address all the symptoms, use nasal steroid, which are also over-the-counter. So there are a lot of different medications over-the-counter that you can use to address all these symptoms.
My daughter used to have terrible allergies, and it felt like she would build like a tolerance to one type of medication. So do people actually do that? Do they build a tolerance to antihistamines, or do you recommend switching to another brand if it seems like what you're currently using doesn't work well?
So remember I told you at the outset of my talk, it is an orchestra. In the beginning, histamine played a role. You felt magic with antihistamine. Everything was perfect. But as the time goes by, your disease is progressing. You can do antihistamine, but they're not going to help. Then you are doing the steroid. They're helpful, but you can't, you know, outgrow those medications. Yes, you can combine a nasal steroid with antihistamine together. Yes, you can.
That's really helpful to think of each medication as a different instrument in the orchestra.
Yeah.
And sometimes you just have to play a different instrument.
Exactly. So sometimes this question is very common. Can I change the brand? But all antihistamine, you know, it may be individual perception. Changing the brand is not going to change the outcome. But individuals have, you know, different experience.
And what about allergy shots versus tablets?
So let's talk. I specialize, immunotherapy. The fancy name is immunotherapy. We've called them for allergy shot for a long time. So let's talk about allergy shot, you know, whether you give it by injections or by sublingual tablet. So let's start with the injections immunotherapy. Why? Because we have practiced injection immunotherapy for more than 100 years in this country. In fact, United States is the pioneer in allergy injections, using allergy injections for allergic diseases. So we have a very good and strong track record for this. So let's start with what is allergy injections. In allergy injection, basically, you give the same stuff that one is allergic to in a gradually increasing doses, so that when you are naturally exposed to those allergens, your body is not going to react. You can consider it as a sort of desensitization. Same stuff, natural thing, you're giving it in a way that your body can tolerate and build up to the point that when you are naturally exposed to those allergens, you're not going to react. So allergy injection is considered the best long-term solution for allergic diseases like hay fever, allergic asthma, allergic eczema, or atopic dermatitis. So we have a strong track record, highly, if it is done right. Remember, allergy injection needs a little expertise. One has to understand that not only the immune system, but also understand the good history, connect them with the environmental factors, seasonality, do the right testing. So it needs a little bit of, nuance there. So one has to understand what you're doing. If you do it right, success rate is very high, close to 80%. No long-term side effect. How many times you can prescribe something for a long time and say no long-term side effect? Almost everybody get itching and redness at the site of injections. However, one in a million, roughly, can have serious life-threatening reactions. So allergy injections should be done only by the specialist, or at least recommended by them. And they have to take that small risk, one in a million, however small it is. But if it happens to you, it is not one in a million. But it does happen. It has happened in the past. And we have a good track record in this country. We are careful in screening and observing them after shot. But success rate is very high, as a matter. So what do you mean by success rate? So this is also important. So allergy injections benefits are many. It reduces the symptoms like itchy, sneezy, runny nose that you mentioned, itching and watering of the eye by 80% or more. It reduces the use of, you don't need any antihistamine or hardly any medication. So 80% reduction in symptoms, about 80% reduction in the medication use. But now we are also finding that if you do the allergy injection right time, you also prevent the development of asthma. Let's say your child comes to me with nose and sinus and chronic allergy issue. Then I start allergy shot before she or he develop allergy asthma. Then what I'm doing actually, not only addressing your symptom in the nose and sinuses, but I'm also cutting down her chance of developing or his chance of developing allergic asthma by 50%. That's a huge deal, but it has to be done by a right person, should know what they're doing. So this is the challenge now for the younger allergists in this country.
That makes a huge difference. So, wow, yeah. Especially when you're dealing with children. So, wow. Yeah. Who's usually a good candidate for immunotherapy or allergy shots?
Okay, so this is also a very good question. We don't do allergy shot usually when they're, until they're 6 years of age and up. So moderate to severe allergic condition, like allergic rhinitis or hay fever, we call it. People with not respond to the medication. They've tried over-the-counter medicine, like antihistamine, nasal steroid, not responding. They affect their quality of life. They cannot sleep. They miss school. Adult may miss work. So those are the things, you know, not responding to the medication, affecting their quality of life, and disease is progressing. Even if you're doing antihistamine and nasal steroid, they're still, you know, every time season change, they come with a bronchitis or asthma type of picture. So what it tells you, that disease process from the nose and sinus is now going down to the chest. That's good enough indications for starting allergen immunotherapy or allergy shot or immunotherapy.
Thank you. So let's talk about somebody who's just realizing that what they're suffering from is not a cold, that they may actually be having a seasonal allergy. So for the adult or the child that may just all of a sudden be realizing that they have an allergy issue, what are some of the home or over-the-counter treatments that they should start with?
So this is also a good question. You know, what do? You know, it is not easy even go to the primary care, let alone specialist. First thing they can do, we have very safe antihistamines in the market. So if you cannot avoid the allergens, as I mentioned, it is hard, then start with some antihistamines, see how they go. In the beginning, many of them will get significant relief. You don't need to rush to any doctor just for the regular allergy symptoms. You can use the antihistamine, you know,
in age-appropriate doses, plus nasal steroid. They're also used over the counter. You know, I don't like to use nasal steroid in the children as much. If you don't do it right, it can cause nosebleed and some other complications from use. So one has to know how to use the nose spray correctly. So those two medicines are highly effective in the early stage of the allergic diseases, particularly hay fever. So that's what I do. But if they have got asthma symptoms, like cough, wheezing, and shortness of breath, that is the time you cannot just do home remedy. You have to go to your primary care provider, make sure that you are not wheezing, doesn't need any acute intervention like systemic steroid or oral steroid or injection steroid or other medication for asthma. Anytime you have chest symptoms, like cough, wheezing, chest tightness, shortness of breath, that is the time to go to the doctor.
Excellent. Are there supplements or holistic remedies that you've seen people have good luck with?
Okay, so this is also an interesting question, and I'm not an expert on the holistic, so my views are very personal, and I don't want you to generalize it, you know, because there are no studies on those holistic medicine. So if something is not published, that is not my fault. I don't comment on that. Follow your family tradition if that has helped, you know. You know, sometimes we may not put science behind it, but it doesn't negate the family value, you know. We are, you know, food allergy, for example, you know, now we are saying going back to the family history, you know. You will realize it many years ago in the United States, we would tell the parents, don't give peanut until they're 3 years of age. But that has changed in the last 10 years. Now we're saying that expose them to your family values. If your mom gave you peanut at 6 months of age, do that. You know, don't follow our guideline. We suggest you introduce them to the table food by the time they're 6 months of age, but do not delay after 12 months. You know, do not do that. You know? Do it between 6 months and 12 months and follow your family tradition. So, yes. So as far as holistic medicine is concerned, my advice is follow your family tradition. I don't have any science to back it up.
Got it. I have family members that have had great success with acupuncture and also with local honey. So I know that, you know, some people do have success with those things, but I appreciate your scientific approach to that too. When someone is suffering from seasonal allergies and the basic prevention and treatments aren't working, should they go to their primary care doctor first or look to an allergist? What should be their first steps?
So my point is that if you fit the criteria of chronic condition, like nose and sinus symptoms, more than 5 months in a year, going on for a couple of years, you have gone to the primary care doctor, only thing he or she is offering you is antihistamine and nasal steroid, and you're exposing yourself to the high dose of systemic steroid multiple times, those are the good enough reason you should go to a specialist. What primary care is going to do for you? That is my answer to you. If you are going to get the same treatment multiple times, it is not going to change the outcome. No changes in long-term outcome. You might go, of course, if you're having acute asthma symptoms, you should always go to the doctor. That is given. But if your nose and sinus symptoms are persisting and they're recurrent, and you are already taking antihistamine and nasal steroid, and you every time you go to the doctor, what he or she will do, he will give you some more systemic steroid. And I always tell my patient, you know, you'll feel better for a while. Steroid injections are not allergy injections. They are not extract made out of the pollens or other things. Steroid is a potentially, you know, serious medication with multiple different side effects that can affect your blood pressure, diabetes, bone health, increased risk of infection, obesity, you name it. There's no end how much I can talk about side effect of the steroid. So yes, if you have issues like that I mentioned, ask your primary doctor. You have been to him many times already. So make a referral. Go to a board-certified allergy and immunology specialist.
What are the top three things you want our listeners to take away from this discussion?
First of all, I would say that allergy, unfortunately, is a chronic disease. It's a genetic component and environmental component. So unfortunately, you cannot change your gene. These are non-modifiable risk factors. Whatever the environment, you can change from place to place, but you'll be exposed to the local allergens because you have the right allergy gene. Don't expect that moving place to place is going to make you feel better. Even if it does, it is going to be very short-lasting. If your symptoms are mild, doesn't affect your quality of life, as I mentioned, try some antihistamine and nasal steroid. If you have to go to the doctor a few times a year to get a steroid shot or antibody, not a good sign. Seek an allergy specialist advice.
And before we go, is there anything we haven't discussed that you want to make sure our listeners know about allergies and treatments?
So one thing I would say that in addition to everything that we talk about, the cause of the disease, the prevention of the things, mild treatment of the disease. If you do the allergy shot, for example, or immunotherapy, remember, it has got a lasting benefit. Prevention of asthma is something that we want to mention. An allergy injection has no long-term side effect. People worry about, am I going to get injections? And it's, yes, it is painful. So next question they want to ask, why can't I get a tablet? Sublingual immunotherapy. That is also FDA approved. But the only problem is that in the United States, people are multi-allergen sensitive, or what we call in medical term, polysensitized. So they have got trees, grass, wheat pollen, dog and cat dander, mold. But grass tablet or the other tablets that we have for sublingual immunotherapy, only for selective allergens, like grass, dust mite, cat. But we have got 20 different allergens that play a major role. So you'll be spending more money, but you'll not be able to, you know, grass allergy tablet is not going to protect you from the weed allergens or tree allergens. So you have to do so much of things, you know. And they're not better than injection immunotherapy. Does it make sense?
It does. Wow.
So it's more expensive. You know, you don't have much, you know, availability of different allergenic tablet. And of course, you know, expense is one of them.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for this conversation today. It's been really helpful to learn what our options are for treatment and prevention of these allergies.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining us today on Talk with a Doc. We look forward to continuing the important conversation on health and wellness with more experts from Providence in future episodes. Make sure to listen to all of our shows on Lit Live Radio, under Future of Health Radio, or your favorite podcast platform. And follow us on social media. We can be found on X and Facebook at Providence and Instagram under Providence Health System. To learn more about our mission, programs, and services, go to providence.org. And remember, the information provided during this program is for educational purposes only. You should always consult your healthcare provider if you have questions regarding a medical condition or treatment. Thanks for listening, and remember, at Providence, we see the life in you.